Hey, if you're pregnant over 40, I have just the community for you. It's a private community away from Facebook where women just like you come together to meet and support one another during pregnancy. To sign up for the waitlist, go to over40fabulousandpregnant.com/waitlist and be the first to know when the membership is open. I can't wait to see you inside. Welcome to Over 40, Fabulous, and Pregnant. I am your host, Jamie Massey, and you're listening to episode 35. If you're looking for pregnancy stories of women over 40, you've come to the right place. Today on the show, we have Tamika from Georgia, who is the creator of the Facebook group Pregnancy After 40 Private Group and author of 40 Plus Fertility Tips. She is on to share her pregnancies at 41 and 43. In this episode, she explains her emotional release to allow her to conceive. She talks about how she was induced for both pregnancies and with a birth plan of having no pain. And then she found out she was pregnant again while she was breastfeeding. We do briefly discuss loss in this episode, and I believe it's so important we continue to discuss it. So many of us go through pregnancy loss and feel silenced. And of course, we'll get into her book a little bit. And with that, let's get into Tamika's pregnancies at 41 and 43. Tamika, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Before we get into your story, will you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So originally I am from Connecticut, but I moved to Georgia almost 30 years ago. So I am officially a peach. I have three children altogether. I had a daughter when I was 25 years old and I was a single parent. And then I got married at 41 and had two kids after that. So I had my first son at 41 and then my second son at 43.
So bring us back to getting pregnant at 41. How did that start?
So I've known my husband, and I knew my husband at that time probably about 14, 15 years. And we were not in a relationship all that time. We just started dating exclusively. And when we got together, when I was 40, you know, we had the discussions early on. My husband, he didn't have any children. And I was 40. He was 47. He didn't have any children. So we had the discussion because I'm like, he wants kids. He said he wanted children. And I'm like, I've heard all the statistics that we all have heard after 35. I'm like, I'm 40 now. I just might be barren. I don't know what's going on with my eggs, you know, all of that. Although in the back of my mind, I was like, well, I already had a kid, so I probably can do it again. And then I looked at him and I was like, well, he doesn't have any kids at 47, which is kind of strange. And I was like, well, maybe something's wrong with him. Maybe he's sterile. But I didn't say that audibly. But we did have a discussion. So we decided to not necessarily try, but we weren't going to prevent it either. And so if it happened, it would happen. 6 months in, I did not get pregnant. And so after the 6 months, then I really started kind of questioning myself and my body at this point, because I'm like, okay, so I guess it's true. You know, you're 40 and I'm not going to be able to conceive. And I actually kind of went through some things. I was in a long-term relationship before him and I got together. And I kind of had like an emotional relief where I kind of had like the purge, some feelings, some hurt and all of this. I didn't realize I had a lot of stress from previous relationships, being a single parent, working, you know, being an attorney, like all these things. I was just stressed and didn't really process a lot of things because we as a lot of women or as women, we just try to keep going without giving ourselves a break or anything. And so I had an emotional release. And during this emotional release, afterwards, I experienced the greatest sense of peace that I ever had. And within a month of that, I was pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah. And so, you know, the stress that we think that we don't have and we're dealing with, a lot of us do have it, and we just kind of need to work that out. And so I was excited. We were excited.
Wait, will you go back to the emotional release? What was that like physically, mentally?
It was a Sunday afternoon with me bawling in my bathroom. Literally, I will never forget it. And it was a lot of, again, just some hurt and pain from my past that I hadn't dealt with, and me accepting my husband. And it was spiritual as well. It was, you know, me asking God to show me how to be the wife that my husband needed me to be, and, you know, open up my heart, because I realized my heart was not open to him because I was still dealing with some other things. So that was pretty much it. But just me bawling like a baby on a Sunday afternoon. And when I was done, like I said, I was just overwhelmed, overcome with peace that I had not experienced in a really long time. Like I said, a month after that, I was pregnant, not expecting it, because I went out the country shortly after that. And I came back and I had travelers things going on because of water issues and all that.
Oh, so no.
I wasn't thinking that I was pregnant, but, you know, I realized my cycle didn't come on. I took a test and a couple tests, and they came back positive. I think I found out the day it was Halloween of 2017.
So what were you thinking whenever you saw that pregnancy test?
So again, I was excited, and I brought my husband up there, and I show him the pregnancy test, and he's like, okay, what am I looking at?
What does this mean?
He has no idea. And I was like, I'm pregnant. And so he kind of looked, and he kind of gave me a hug. And again, I was a single parent at that time, and I was like, you're going to be a father. And he was kind of like, well, I'm not going to be a father of one, I'm going to be a father of two, basically stating that he was going to be a father to my daughter as well. So it was, he's an only child, and his parents at the time were 88, 92.
Wow.
His mom and dad, and, you know, they didn't have any grandchildren. So when my son was born, they became grandparents for the first time at that age.
Oh, how sweet.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was exciting for everyone, because I definitely wanted to have more children. I just needed to be married if I did it again, because being a single parent is not fun at all. It's very challenging, difficult. So, yeah, it was exciting. But I will say, after the initial excitement, you know how we are. We go to Google, Dr. Google, and we just start looking at the statistics again. And there's a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of anxiety during the whole pregnancy. But one of the things that helped, my husband was just kind of like, why don't you just kind of write little blog posts about your pregnancy throughout. And so I did that a little bit. I just didn't publish it anywhere, again, because I was terrified that I was not going to deliver, or was, you know, something was going to happen. The baby wasn't going to be healthy. And so I kind of kept it until after I had him. So.
Well, how was your pregnancy physically?
Physically, it was okay. So being 40, 41, you do, at least where we are, we're kind of like automatically sent over to a maternal fetal specialist for our geriatric pregnancies. And so that was different, but it was good at the same time, because you're monitored a lot more. You get more than just the one ultrasound, the one or two ultrasounds during a normal pregnancy, a normal age pregnancy, I guess. But over 40, you know, you have more ultrasounds, so you can kind of keep track of what's going on. And so I actually ended up having, my son had IUGR, which was intrauterine growth restriction. So he was small, and he was weighing in like at the 8th percentile of, you know, babies, fetuses for his age and for his recent gestational age. And so again, that just kind of kept me going to the doctor a little bit more, just some more monitoring. And I want to say the day before his due date, I went to the hospital just for a regular checkup, see how everything was going. And the doctor was just kind of like, the baby's still measuring small. And because of your age, we don't like to go past 40 weeks because your placenta starts to deteriorate. So we suggest that we go ahead and induce. And so I was just kind of with myself, my husband, and my daughter. My daughter came along with us. We just thought it was just going to be a quick visit, see the baby, go home. It was not. It was, you're staying here. We're just going to roll you over to the hospital. And your husband and kid can come later with food and clothes. So that's what happened. They did induce that day. And he was still, ended up, my labor was about 16 hours. So I was still delivered on my official due date.
Did you get Pitocin? Is that how it is? You got it all?
I got it all. I got Pitocin, I got epidurals, I got Cytotec, Steridil. I had it all. And I will say this, my first pregnancy with my daughter, it was all natural. Not planned natural necessarily, but it was all natural. And I knew I did not want to do that again. And so my birth plan this time around, I said, you know, I wanted to have an epidural. Mm-hmm. It took a little while for the epidural to come, but it finally came and brought a lot of relief. What I didn't know was the side effects of the epidural, meaning that it can affect the baby. So the baby started getting in distress. My blood pressure dropped. I didn't know why, but just remember being in the hospital and just kind of getting nauseous and things just kind of spinning around me. And then I remember a nurse rushing in and she's like, your blood pressure's dropped. We're going to have to break it up. And baby's in distress. And I'm like, well, why didn't you tell me, like, you know, what to look for either on the monitor, like my blood pressure? Like, they just didn't tell me like anything at all. So, it's not unusual, but they were able to get everything kind of back to norm. I delivered him and I think about 3 pushes. I'm like a 2 or 3 push mom. Wow. So when it's time to actually push and deliver, that part is pretty easy. It's just labor is just horrible. So,
yeah, getting there.
And I don't know if many of your listeners know, but usually when you're a little bit older, at least where I am, for both of my pregnancies over 40, I was immediately told to take a baby aspirin from the beginning of my pregnancy. So when I had my first son after that delivery, I was apparently bleeding a lot more than normal. So they had to give me something to kind of stop the bleeding. I think it was because of the baby aspirin, just kind of thinning out your blood. So second go around, when I had my second son, I took the baby aspirin. I just didn't take it as much, just try to prevent the excess bleeding.
So, For your birth plan for at 41, what was important to you during that time?
I didn't want to be in a lot of pain. That was it. So I'll say it was just totally different than when I had my daughter. When I had my daughter, I had a midwife. And I was just pretty much like, I don't necessarily want to go in with an epidural or pain medication. I'll just kind of see how it goes. And if I feel like I need it and it's an option, then I'll go that route. Mm-hmm. Again, it just so happened I never received the epidural and it was all natural. And I just remember just being really delirious in the hospital. And I just didn't want that. I wanted to be present. And I didn't want to be in pain. You know, I kind of took the easy route, so to speak. But so yeah, my birth plan was to not be in as much pain, and definitely, you know, I discussed having an epidural earlier on. And so there was never really any talk of C-sections or anything like that. So they were all vaginal births.
That's good.
That I had.
Mm-hmm. And how was your recovery?
Recovery was interesting with my first son because on day 2, like I felt great and I felt amazing. And I was nursing, kind of, sort of, but I felt good overall. And I remember before I was discharged, the nurse asked me, do you want pain medication before you go home? And I was like, you know what? I feel good. I feel great. I don't think I need it. Yeah, don't do that. Because... The next day when I got home, I swear it felt like 16 tractor trailers like hit me all at once. Like everything in my body hurt. And I guess when I was still in the hospital, I still kind of had some of the drugs in my system, the pain reliever in my system. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't even walk. That was the biggest thing that I remember. As far as the recovery, everything else kind of went well. I pushed myself a little too much, though.
You mean as in walking physically, getting and doing things?
Doing things, because at 3.5 weeks, I worked for myself. Always had control of my schedule, but at 3.5 weeks, I started working again. And I should not have. So I pushed myself. And that, you know, kind of led to, you know, a couple years later when I had my second son, almost a breakdown, a mental breakdown, because I didn't take the time that I needed.
Yeah.
The time. So.
Yeah. Mentally, how were you with this one in recovery?
I was good. I was good. I didn't have postpartum depression with any of them. Anything that I had, was probably self-induced. Right. Because I do a lot and I push myself a lot. So overall, though, I was pretty OK. Mm-hmm. I think more so mentally, it kind of took its toll when I had my second son. And when I had my second son, it was 2 weeks before the country was shut down with COVID.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a little bit different. So there was a lot of other things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to consciously and intentionally take a break, or I was not going to make it.
Yeah. Tell us about, you were breastfeeding. You said kind of. Explain that.
So I think a little bit difficult for me initially, but mm-hmm. with my first one, I did nurse him. Mm-hmm. By the end of the second month, though, we were kind of struggling with it, because I did get a pump and I wanted my husband to be involved in the feeding process. And so I was pumping a lot and I was nursing when I could, but my son, he preferred the bottle over the breast. So that was frustrating when I did try to nurse him. And so by month three, and I really did want to nurse him. So by month three, I kind of kicked the bottle. I was like, nope, it's just me and you, kid. If you want to eat, it's going to be this way.
So did that work?
It did work, but, and I was also struggling because it hurt so much within those first 2 months. And I don't know if it was the pump or I don't know what it was, but once I kind of decreased the pump usage and started nursing more, and I'm not going to say I eliminated pumping because I didn't, but I definitely decreased it. It was a lot easier to nurse him. And so it wasn't as painful. And I nursed him for about 8 months until I found out I was pregnant again. And I was just kind of like, I am sorry, I can't nurse and be pregnant at the same time.
So take us back to that. So you're at 8 months and you said this was planned. So how was the timing with that?
So again, around when my son was 3 months old, 3.5 months old, my husband and I, we had the conversation, you know, of wanting to have another baby.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted them to have another one, and he said he did, and I wanted to have another one. Interestingly enough, I wanted to have another one because my daughter hated being an only child. And so I didn't want that for this baby. Number two is we were both a little bit older. And you need a lot of energy for kids. And I tell people, like, even at that time, my husband was 48 when I had my son. When he gets out of bed, it takes him like 10, 15 sets before he can walk straight, because he's got to get his knees together. So, there's something about our bodies that change, admittedly, right? We have to admit our bodies to change. And we are a little bit older, and just the energy, I just wanted him to have a playmate. So it was very conscious that we did have another baby. And I will say, you know, I was trying from that point on, and it was just getting very, very frustrating. Like, I thought it was going to happen. You know, you hear that you're more fertile right after you give birth. Within those first 3 months, I thought it would happen then, but it didn't. So I was like, okay, we'll just kind of like try, not plan it. And then it just happened. And it wasn't really happening. And so I finally said, okay, let me go ahead and download an app, be a little bit more intentional. And so I put in the dates. So I always kept track of my cycle. I put in the dates of my cycles. And it, a couple of days later, a week later, I think it was like, oh, hey, you should take a pregnancy test. And I'm like, yeah, no way. I literally just started using this app. And so I took a pregnancy test and it was positive. I was thinking we were going to have to start, you know, planning on my fertile days and all that. But I didn't have to because I was already pregnant. Wow. And it probably has something to do with the fact that I was like, you know what? Just let's just take a break for a minute. And that stress, again, that we harbor inside probably somehow affected it. Because I was disappointed every month for those, you know, next 4 or 5 months. Not conceiving. And then when I was finally like, just forget it, we'll just try next month, just kind of relax, I ended up getting pregnant. Unfortunately, that pregnancy ended up in a miscarriage a couple months later, probably around 8 weeks. Uh-huh. About 8 weeks, I did miscarry. Super traumatic for me then.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you. And I know a lot of us go through it. It was actually on an Easter Sunday when it happened. You know, his parents were over, my mom was over, you know, we're like talking about baby names and genders and all that, and I go to the bathroom, I'm cramping, and I go to the bathroom and I knew, you know, yeah. I was miscarrying. So went to the doctor and they confirmed everything kind of purged itself out. Mm-hmm. Doctor asked, do you, you know, want to try again? And I was like, yes. And she's pretty much said, well, wait one cycle. Wait till your cycle comes back on again and then, you know, try again. So, you know, at least the OB was supportive, because not all OBs are supportive at this age, but she was, you know, definitely supportive. And I did take out the app again. And the first month, so my fertile days, and my husband and I capitalized on that first month of fertile days. And the day before my oldest son's first birthday party, I took another pregnancy test and I was pregnant again. So
you were just late and that's why you took it.
Yeah. Well, following the app, it told me you should take a pregnancy test. Yes.
So, well, you might as well listen, because it's been right twice.
It's been right. Yes. Yes. Yeah, so we were pregnant then, and I was 42 at the time when that happened. And I delivered when I was 43.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about that pregnancy. How was that one?
Totally different. With this one, during the pregnancy with my youngest son, it was a little bit more challenging because I'd had the miscarriage right before him. I had a subchorionic hemorrhage during the pregnancy. So, you know, I don't know, like a month or two months in, maybe I started bleeding and I thought I was miscarrying again. So literally every time I went to the bathroom for the next 7-8 months, I'm looking for blood. My anxiety was through the roof. By this point, we didn't discuss it, but after I had my first son, I started the Pregnancy After 40 group on Facebook. And so by this point, we had several thousand members. And so I'm really active in the group. And so you see good things. You know, the Pregnancy After 40 journey is just that, right? It's up, it's down, there's good, there's bad. There's, you know, the losses and there's the success stories. And when you're pregnant, seeing the losses, the miscarriages, it really does not help. It doesn't help you mentally if you're, you know, full of anxiety, thinking that, you know, at this age and you've already had a miscarriage. So I was so relieved when I had them. Of course, you know, you're probably pretty uncomfortable towards the end. So there's a physical component of it. But I think, again, the mental component of it, the emotional component of it, was real. And so I was just relieved to actually have him. I had gestational diabetes with my youngest son. So that was very, very interesting. Again, immediately I was referred over to a specialist due to age, was told to take the aspirin. But I did, again, my numbers were off with the glucose test. And so it was like, I went to another doctor and it was like, okay, you need to take insulin or metformin or whatever it is they take for diabetes. And I am not necessarily big on taking medication if I don't have to. Mm-hmm. So that was my issue, because I was just kind of concerned. You know, I had to, you know, prick my finger 3 times a day. I had to write down my numbers, look at the fasting numbers and that kind of thing. And they were just like, well, you just need to take this medication. I'm like, well, can you just give me like a chance? Like, tell me what I can do so I can not take medication. Like, give me a minute. So I ended up going to a nutritionist, and the nutritionist was very, very helpful. It just explained, like, someone for the first time, like, explained how all this went. And so I tried different things. And so I was able to control my numbers. Again, just trying different things. See what worked for me. Our bodies are different. You know, when you eat, you know, that last time you eat, what it is for me, and I don't necessarily suggest this, but for me, my morning fasting numbers were the worst. Those are the ones that are a little bit higher. But for me, what worked was taking the night before was like a bite-sized piece of Halloween candy. You know, like the miniature candy that we get during Halloween?
Yeah.
I took one of those. It was a Snickers, the really small ones, at night. And then my fasting numbers would be fine in the morning. I don't suggest that to everyone. It's just what worked for me, because popcorn did not.
So. Wow.
But yeah, I was able to get through the rest of the pregnancy without having to take medication. I did take metformin, I think, for maybe a couple weeks, maybe like half a dosage. But I don't want to do this. I don't want my body to be dependent on this medication. Yeah. You know, I want to know, you know, what it is I can't eat, what I can't eat, and just control that. And so I got creative with dishes. You know, I got rid of the pastas, and that's when I started cooking with zucchini instead of pasta, and mm-hmm. you know, creating different dishes and, you know, different types of breads, if anything. So I actually probably lost weight, like myself. I was just gaining the baby weight, because the way that I was eating was just totally different. So he was still a big baby, a bigger baby. Regardless. So I think the week before, because they saw his growth, they were like, well, we're gonna have to induce. So it was a planned induction. Mm-hmm. Maybe at 38 weeks was when they wanted to induce. And it was the first time that week before, it was the first time that anyone had ever brought up a C-section. They were like, well, we want to, you know, make sure that we induce you, because the way that the baby's growing, baby's shoulders might get stuck behind your pelvic bone. Then we're going to have to induce. I'm sorry, we're going to have to do a C-section. Yes. But it was the first time. So that freaked me out. Because no one had ever mentioned C-section to me before. I just assumed it was just going to be a vaginal birth. So I went in for the induction, and everything went fine. So interestingly enough, after my first son, I would take my first son to like little play dates and little places like libraries and stuff like that. So I met a friend, and she was a labor and delivery nurse at the hospital where I was delivering. And so when I went in for my induction for my second son, she texted me and she was like, your favorite doctor's on call today. And I've already notified the nurses you're coming in, and they know that you want an epidural like last week. So that is exactly what happened. I went in and I started taking the Pitocin and anything that was needed for induction, probably around 11 a.m. And I remember the nurse coming in saying, well, you're having contractions. Do you want your epidural now? And I didn't really feel the contractions. And they were like, you know, you can take the epidural now. And I'm like, okay. I mean, if you suggest it, like, I don't want to feel any pain. So I took the epidural then. And I was contracting because I wasn't feeling anything. Like, I'm sitting there in the hospital bed. I'm playing Candy Crush on my phone. Like, I'm like recording videos about the progress. The labor and delivery, and I didn't feel anything. Everything was progressing. And then I want to say maybe like 8 o'clock or so, 7, 8 o'clock or so, the epidural was wearing off a little bit. And they asked me again, do you want to get another dose of the epidural? Because you can. And I was like, they were like, well, you say you didn't want to feel anything. And I was like, you know what? Hit me. So they gave me another epidural. I probably should not have taken a second epidural because when it was time for me to push the baby, the doctor was like, push. And I'm like, I am pushing. And he was like, I'm going to need to push harder. I was like, I can't feel anything. I promise you I'm doing everything that I can. And so, again, I couldn't feel anything. So that kind of prolonged delivery for me until the epidural started wearing off. And then I was able to push. So, like, again, two or three times, and I pushed him. He came out.
How was that moment?
It was great. And he was a bigger baby, so I was glad to have that out as well. But
how big was he?
Some of that. He wasn't huge. He was 8 pounds, 9 ounces. He was bigger than the other babies, but, you know, kind of on the bigger side. You know, I had a plan, right? My plan was I wanted to have two boys. So that the youngest one could just wear all the clothes that the other one had. It was just going to be perfect. And it was not like my youngest son, because he was a little bit bigger, he couldn't wear any of the newer clothes. And he went through Pampers really quick. Like, we had like give away some Pampers because he just grew out of them too quick. He's insane. And like, my plan just did not work. Like, it's because my first son, he was always on the smaller side. He was like an 8th to 12th percentile, so he was about 2 years old. And so his clothes were a little bit smaller, and then we need the bigger clothes for the younger ones. But other than that, yeah, everything was pretty good. Recovery with him, I smartened up. And I took the pain medication when I left the hospital this time. Nursing with him was pretty good. Like, he just took to nursing like he was just born to nurse. And I ended up nursing him for 15 months. So he was the longest.
That's great.
Yeah.
So. And your milk supply just kept up with it.
It did. Absolutely. So I know some people wonder, like, when you get a little bit older, and I have people ask me, like, can you still breastfeed? Can you still nurse at that age? Absolutely.
Yeah.
If your body can birth the baby, it can still do what it needs to do to feed your baby. So that part was good.
So. Mentally, will you also kind of go over that?
So again, when I had my youngest son, it was 2 weeks before the country shut down with COVID. So 2 weeks, and he also had jaundice as well. So we were going to the hospital the first 10 days, like every day, just to check his numbers. He was super, super red for like a month or two, which they say wasn't anything in particular, but the jaundice, he didn't have to be admitted, but it was something we had to watch for and take him to the hospital for, again, like the first 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And COVID hit. So that didn't help anyone's mental health in this country, so, or anywhere else. So I had my daughter, who was a senior in high school. Everything kind of shut down for her. Like, her whole life changed. It's just, things were just kind of erratic for her. So she was dealing with some mental things, right? Mental health issues as well. So trying to cater to her. Then I had a 1-year-old who was not quite 2, because my sons are 20 months apart. So he wasn't quite 2 years old. Trying to, you know, take care of him, and then the newborn, not sleeping, of course, just trying to do too much. My husband's parents were a little bit older at that point. He was having to tend to his parents a little bit more. It was just crazy. I went back to work probably about 7-8 weeks after postpartum. I wish I would have taken some more time off. Yeah. I'll say that. And because in the nature of what I do, I meet with clients, you know, throughout the day. Not necessarily because I don't work a 9-to-5, but I meet with them throughout the day. So because I was nursing and I didn't want to pump this go around, because I just didn't want to experience the issues that I had before. Uh-huh. My oldest son, I'd go on an appointment, I'd come back home, take a full shower, start nursing, because it was COVID. We didn't know what was going on.
Sure.
Right. And so then I have another appointment, do the same thing, go out there, try to hurry up, do my appointment, get back before he had to eat, take a full shower, and then nurse him again. So that just kind of added to whatever else was going on. I was just like moving, not sleeping. I'm trying to deal with, you know, all three kids at this point. So when he was probably about 4 or 5 months old, my husband, we were moving, and I, you know, told my husband, I was like, I'm about to have a mental breakdown. I just am. Like, my father, he was getting sick, so I was having to tend a little bit more to him. It was crazy. So I was like, I've got to take a break. And I initially intended just to take about a month off. That month ended up being like 7 or 8 or 9, but it was needed, because once we moved, at a month after we moved, my husband's dad passed. And so his mom came to live with us. And so now we're like in a new place, kids, COVID, now having to be caretakers to his mom. It just got super, super crazy. And the month in, you know, I was kind of like, I cannot sustain this. And so I had to be very intentional about taking care of myself. And we talk about self-care a lot, but, you know, more than that is finding that healthy balance. So I just felt like I couldn't breathe, and I was still nursing at this point. And I ended up going to the hospital. So I stopped nursing my son at 15 months because I had to go to the hospital for like a week. I ended up getting pancreatitis. Yeah, I was in a hospital, and basically I wasn't on anything. Like, meaning I wasn't eating anything. I couldn't consume any water, fluids, food, or anything for like a week. So my body was completely, and it was almost like a break. Like, going to the hospital should not be a break from real life, but it was. And when I got out, again, at this point, I'm thinking, okay, I just got out of the hospital, getting back into the routine of the kids. And a month later, I got pregnant again.
Wow. Total surprise.
Total surprise. Because I think, again, coming out of the hospital, we weren't very active, maybe like one time. And then I ended up getting pregnant. But it wasn't planned. We didn't plan on having any more children. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay, well, this is what's supposed to happen. This is what's supposed to happen. And I'm just going to, and we're going to embrace it. And plan. And I was wondering, like, how did I get pregnant? And I just got out of the hospital. And I'm always like thinking, like, how do things work? And I realized that my body was probably the cleanest that it had been ever. Because again, I couldn't, for a week, I couldn't eat and I couldn't drink, and literally everything was out of my body. And so, like, doing detoxes and cleanses and all that, like, that's really important.
Yeah.
Because at this age, you know, we have like 30 years more stress, 30 years more alcohol, 30 years more processed foods, like all of that in our bodies.
Yeah.
And so I probably, at that moment, I was probably the healthiest. And again, got pregnant, like not trying, not super active. And so I share that with people who, you know, are trying to figure like different things that they can do. They're not necessarily medical, but just practical.
Yeah.
Again, I end up miscarrying again. That baby. That one was pretty traumatic because I was a couple months. And yeah, it was pretty traumatic. I don't even want to go through that one, but
that's okay.
I ended up getting pregnant one more time before the year was over at 45. So, wow. So since turning 40, I've been pregnant 5 times. I've had 3 miscarriages and I've had 2 children.
I know miscarriages are hard to talk about, and I appreciate you speaking about those.
Yeah. I can talk about it, but I just don't want to focus on that.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. For other women who are listening, and I just want to, you know, share the encouragement. We have family, we have friends, sometimes we have doctors who don't support our vision and our desire to have a baby. And they make it seem like your baby is going to have like 12 fingers or, you know, just not be healthy, or you can't have a baby. And it just simply isn't true.
Yeah. Yeah. That's perfect. Is there anything else you want to add about your pregnancies?
You know, I think what was important through all of them was walking and keeping your body moving.
Yeah.
And it's probably a theme throughout your previous guests, you know, just kind of keep moving.
Yeah. What do you think has been your biggest challenge being pregnant over 40?
Probably the energy. I think my energy is just a little, it's different. It's slowed down.
Yeah.
So
is there anything you'd recommend that you would help prepare someone for pregnancy and birth over 40?
I don't know if this is specifically towards birth, pregnancy, but what I would say to everyone before you get pregnant, during pregnancy, and after pregnancy is to find time for you. really and intentionally find time for you, because I don't think that we do that enough. And that may mean 2 hours a week. It might mean one day a week. It might mean, you know, 3 hours once a week or 2 times a week. But communicate that with your partner, if you have other children, and so they get used to it, knowing every Wednesday between 6 and 8, mom's not available or my wife is not available. And carry that throughout your pregnancy, because there is a lot of stress and anxiety associated with having children, just in general, but specifically over 40. Yeah. You know, again, we hear all the stories, we hear all the statistics, all that. And then we're panicking because we know we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Take some time for yourself just to kind of woo-saw, mm-hmm. and don't do anything else. And then continue that after you have the baby.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I didn't know as much about doulas as I do now. And if I were to get pregnant again, if I, you know, were to talk to someone, I would highly suggest a doula and a postpartum doula for you. Which, you know, for a while, once I found out about doulas, I'm like, that's great. You need an advocate, someone who's there just, you know, for you. And you need one afterwards too.
Yeah.
A little bit later on that I found out about postpartum doulas. Mm-hmm. You have the nanny for the baby and the postpartum doula for you. So I think we underestimate how hard and exhausting bringing life into this world can be. And we just think, well, our mothers have done it, our grandmothers have done it, like all these other women have done it, but we just don't talk about it. And so I think that planning those things and getting those things in place, putting those things in place beforehand is key and vital.
What advice would you give yourself when you were pregnant if you could go back?
Probably meditation and yoga. I think I would have incorporated a lot more of that. Mm-hmm. Again, because of the anxiety and the toll that it took on me emotionally and mentally. Uh-huh. And yoga for the flexibility. And chiropractic care to make delivery a little bit easier, which I did do with my oldest son. Uh-huh. So, but yeah, those are things that I would say. Like, if I were to do it again, like, do these things. Take uh-huh. meditation just to calm myself down.
Yeah. So, speaking of, will you tell us a little bit about your book?
Yes. So, again, after speaking with thousands at this point of women, literally all over the world who are 40 plus, who have had babies and trying to have babies, I offered this book again as the easy to read book, because you know I do a lot. So the last thing I need is something that's very complicated with a lot of medical words, but something very practical. And just like everyday tips that we can use to help us conceive. And uh-huh. so some things that I did, some things that other women did between, you know, certain diets, whether it's keto, whether it's the cleansing, whether it's reflexology, just different things that we can do. So I have gathered more than initially started with 50 tips, but I like 40.
I love that.
I like the number 40. So it's a couple more than a 40. 40 plus fertility tips for women over 40 who are trying to conceive. Again, super, super easy read book. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And it's got really good reviews. So I made sure, you know, I'm connected with a lot of doctors and attorneys. But I specifically sent the book out to several doctors just to see how they felt about it from a non-medical perspective. Uh-huh. And it's been really well received. You know, one just saying, like, there's things that they're like, doctors usually just go to the science, but there's really practical things that we all can do.
And it's, yeah.
You know, they're relatively simple. So I'm super excited about it.
Yeah. So all these tips are from all the women kind of from the community, would you say?
Yeah. So for me, other women and research, other doctors, mm-hmm. it was, okay. yeah, it's put together over 2 years. And wow. It's definitely well-researched in there. Citations are there, the sources are there, because, you know, I wanted it to be something that people can look up on their own. So just different things. Again, you don't have to do them all, but really, if anyone incorporates these tips into their lives, it will automatically make you a healthier person and increase your longevity overall. And that's what's important, especially because, you know, women, when we have children at this age were like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be such and such age when the baby is this age. Well, if you want to extend your life as long as possible, like for things that you can control, anyone could utilize, incorporate these tips and help from that standpoint. You know, I need to go back and start using some more of these tips just to make sure that I'm here.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate any book that is not about risks and scaring us more.
Right.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where else can our listeners find you on the internet if they want to learn more about you?
Sure. So Instagram is Pregnancy After 40, F-O-R-T-Y. Facebook, there is the community, and that's Pregnancy After 40, F-O-R-T-Y, again, private group. And the website is pregnancyafter40.com. And for the book, it's 40fertilitytips.com.
Awesome. Tamika, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. And I can't wait to hear some more success stories from your audience.
Tamika had such two wonderful stories. Through her struggles, she has three beautiful children. And I always appreciate it when guests talk about their miscarriages. So many of us women go through them, and I think it's important we talk about them. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great week, and I will see you next Monday.